Dude, that was the Phantom Menace of predictions. Yeah. So much build up and then just disappointment.
I'm just not excited about this one at all.
No, that's terrible. Negative.
Yeah.
Hi everyone, and welcome to Bad Voltage episode 58, which is a remarkably high number. I never thought we'd ever go this long. So what we got on the show, Mr. Langridge?
I want to point out, 58 is not that high a number. I could name, for instance, 1,106, which is quite a lot.
Once he ran out of toes, it was higher than he wanted.
It's 58 commitments, okay? 58, I've never, 58 commitments is a lot, okay? Anyway, carry on, get on with it.
On this show, we started with another big number, the number 2016, and specifically, since that's now our year, we're going to give you our predictions for the things that will happen in the world of tech in 2016.
And they will probably all be wrong.
Probably.
I'd be thoroughly unsurprised.
Yeah, that's definitely not true.
And on that note, it is the first show of 2016, so I would like to be the first member of Bad Voltage to wish you a Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
Oh, yeah. I kind of forgot.
Happy New Year, dudes.
Also on this show, Jono is going to review the coin, which, although it sounds like a coin, it's not a coin. It's a credit card that works in a kind of different way than most cards.
That's what it is.
It's basically not accurate in almost every capacity.
And then we're going to talk with Jorge Garcia about Juju.
Also Castro.
Castro.
Oh yeah.
Not Garcia.
Right. Those are different both people. Again. Yeah.
Well, this is a great start to the year, isn't it?
George Castro.
Yeah, wait, we're not interviewing the guy from Lost. No, it's George.
Well, why does he spell it wrong then? Goodness gracious, George. Get with the program. It's 2016.
But I suspect all the friends you've got called Georgi probably spell it wrong, and he spells it entirely correctly.
You know, that's a really good point, now that I'm thinking about it.
The reason why he does it that way is because... Have you met George?
That's also a good point.
That's the reason why.
You guys make really good points a lot.
No.
And on that fine, fine note...
That was a great intro, wasn't it?
Fantastic. And now, Bad Voltage.
You people are useless.
That might be the worst intro we've ever done.
It's 2016, and therefore what you get is the Bad Voltage 2016 tech predictions. Now, normally, I have a big go at people about the rules, but as you'll have heard from the last episode, what happens is we tried very clearly to stick to a set of rules where we'd have verifiable predictions, and then it turns out everything we said you can't get numbers for, so this year I've decided I don't bloody care. Just predict whatever you like. Whatever, man. We'll argue about it next year. Doesn't matter, because what happens is John and I always get everything wrong anyway. Brian gets most stuff wrong, and Jeremy wins. So I've just accepted.
Hey, hang on a second. No, I came second in the last predictions.
That is highly debatable.
You were wrong. Jeremy won, and I was second. I don't get victory very often. I'm having this one.
You guys, we're fighting over scraps at this point, because all three of us did a pretty crappy job. Let's be fair.
That is fair. So who should we start with?
Let's make Jeremy go first this time so we can
win. Yeah, because he's the winner.
I was not aware of these no unambiguous win condition needed, or else I probably would have come up with a...
Well, same here, Jeremy.
I was going to say, as Stuart Langridge makes the rules up as we start recording.
Well, right, to be clear, having an unambiguous win condition is a good thing, and you should do it if you can. It's just, I tried really hard last year, and then it turned out we just argued anyway.
It was pretty tough to get. I concur with that. Although I will say, if I didn't need an unambiguous win condition, I would say this will be the year that AI really takes off, especially... Around open
it
source
can't be is that
a very big component
man.
Of that.
It's going to be
no,
more verifiable.
That would have been
that.
Mine if I didn't need one. But so
hey
my
guys,
with
can
with
can I just jump in here? A spoiler: one of my predictions is going to be that some of the movies this year will be pretty good.
All right, so at least at least one of the VR or AR devices will be considered a very much a commercial success, and it will not be Oculus Rift.
Okay.
I'm leaning towards, I'm leaning towards an AR device, but I get the VR devices too.
All right.
That's
okay.
That's more caveats so than be, prediction, I think, in there, but nonetheless.
No, it could be any AR, VR, so the PlayStation VR, HTC Vive,
one of them will be
the
considered a
But it will definitely be considered
success.
A commercial success
okay.
in 2016 for the first time ever.
Interesting.
And it won't be
related,
the Rift. So I'm...
I, yeah.
That's pretty
I have
specific.
A related prediction, which will...
Oh, nice.
We'll dovetail with that. So anyway, yeah, okay.
So good. No, that one sounds reasonable?
Yep.
It's a bit lowball, but you know, it's not typically Jeremy.
I'll accept
you know,
it.
I feel like...
Considering that VR has been a pipe dream for 20 years now.
if it helps
oh, really?
Any... I actually almost had a prediction on here that was going to say the exact opposite. So I'm going to go ahead and say, you know what? That's a fair prediction. I don't think it'll happen. So I think Jeremy's digging his own grave with this one. Let's rock
wow.
and roll.
Oh, interesting. I like it. By the way, I want to interject here. I find it interesting that Jeremy has a prediction about VR and it's, you know, it's been a pipe dream for the last 20 years. Therefore, this is probably an ambitious prediction. When I did my VR predictions last year, I got a lot of grief for that.
So
this is very
I think
unfair.
It was actually 2 years ago. You
it was 2 years
one.
Ago.
Honestly, I don't completely believe this one. I'm doing it almost solely because I want to be right on an issue you were wrong on 2 years ago.
I am honestly looking forward to the fact that, as far as I can tell, Jono predicts VR will be a big thing this year. Every year in January, in the same way that other people join gyms in January, Jono goes, VR will be big this year, and it never, ever is. So...
All right. It's right, a dubious prediction, along. But I think it will be funny if it does happen. And so my second one will be Apple will definitively have a down year. And by that, I mean the stock will be lower. The iPhone will sell less than it ever has, you know, in the recent iterations, things like that. The Apple Watch 2 probably will sell better than the 1, but it will not be a great success or anything. So in all, Apple will have a much downer year than they've had
what
in a very long time.
If they put a TV out and it sells a shitload?
Well, then he'd be wrong.
If they put a TV out this year and it causes their stock to go up and everything else, I mean, I think
if
at the end of the year,
well,
you'll
be
able
wrong.
To say
yeah.
Apple was in a position of strength for the last, going on 10 years now, and now they aren't. Or look at what they did again. If they reshape a market segment again, that's not a down year.
Right.
That's most decidedly an up year.
Okay.
I don't think you're going to be right on that one.
But I think...
Not that I'm... Yeah, but
I think
anyway,
for a large reason is because Android phones, I think this year for the first time, are just as pretty.
Yes!
Yeah, no, I think Jeremy's going to be right on this
You look at
one.
What I think of the Nexus 6P and the HTC One M9, you look at Stuart, I think, is in a long, steady relationship with his OnePlus. I think we've hit an inflection point there, and I think the siloed garden that has made them so successful will begin to be their undoing.
I will point out that at least a couple of people have bought the OnePlus X based on my recommendation and come back to me and said, wow, it's really pretty, isn't it? And I said, yes, it is. People are listening, you see. So shut up.
Did they also say they've customer support shit as well?
So. And then my bonus one. Oh, do you have something else there?
No, I was going to ask if you had a
bonus.
Yep,
and the
bonus
one, and this, I'm going out a little bit on a limb here again, but at least one device will actually ship with a flexible or bendable display.
Bullshit.
I want 2 years in a row. I gotta change it up here a little. But
like
I think
it's
a non-zero possibility that will happen, and it will.
Yeah,
if I nail
like
that one,
thing.
I'll be shocked.
Right, that's not gonna...
Also, it will not be the Rubik's.
Even if it's got a flexible display, who cares? Because it's not going to have a flexible battery and flexible circuit board behind it, is it?
I tell you what,
given
the fact that
they have a flexible phone. No.
Given the fact that
it doesn't have to be a phone, I just said a device.
Given the fact that there is nothing debuted at CS from what I can tell that does that, that's a very brave bonus prediction.
Jeremy is a very brave man.
It's a definite stumbling block. I will concur.
And we should point out that they've put flexible displays. There was flexible displays at CS, but they have been every year for the last 2 decades, and no one ever turns them into a product, ever. They're just pointless.
This is the year.
It's kind of like virtual reality that way.
He doesn't sound confident
like
about that
two
one.
2 days
fellas.
Ago, saying electronics companies are not allowed to talk about flexible displays until they make a product out of them.
I made the bonus one especially difficult.
That's why it's bonus.
Right, that's why it's
bonus. Who's next?
I'll go.
Oh, no, bro.
All right. Here we go. All right. My first prediction. Canonical is going to pull out of the phone and portable market entirely by the year's end.
That's the look on, so I know this is a radio show, so you can't hear it. The look on Stuart's face is
sheer incredulity. I made this prediction in a Network World article some weeks ago, so I can stand by this one.
Same predictions. That's fine.
Yeah.
That's
so fine. So by the year's end, Canonical will have pulled out of the phone, and Ubuntu Touch will be just done. They'll go back to their roots, focus more on enterprise.
So if they sell the division, is that pulling out because then it's not Canonical?
Yes. Or? Ooh, that's a good question. I haven't thought about it from that point of view. I'm gonna go so far as to say that Canonical as a company will no longer be in the business of building a platform for phone OEMs and such. So if they sell it off, I think it still applies because they ditched it.
Yeah, well, that's a much different prediction, though. Yeah.
Just to be clear, you're talking about phones, tablets, type stuff. You're not talking about desktop, right?
I'm not talking about desktop. I think they're going to refocus on the desktop and on the server and focus on areas that they can make money at and pull out of phones. And I think it's going to be for strategic and fiscal reasons.
Ubuntu Touch will continue because there'll be Unity 8, but it just won't be. They won't be focusing on phones and tablets. It'll just be
right. And
laptop,
now
desktop,
to have a way to measure this, basically, we either need to by year's end, there will either be an announcement of refocusing, or in the 6 months leading up to the end of the year, there will be no new devices shipping and dwindling stock of pre-existing devices in the channel that are just fading out.
You have a formal announcement.
I go slightly further than that, because there will never be a formal announcement. Because I anticipated a certain amount of pushback when I predicted the same thing in my list, and if they stopped releasing OTAs... new versions of the Phone OS, which come out every 6 weeks. So it's not like an Apple one where you wouldn't know for 12 months if they'd stopped doing it. New versions of the Phone OS come out every 6 weeks. So if they've stopped doing that, that to my mind counts as pulling out. There's never been a formal announcement that the Ubuntu TV project is officially on hold, for God's sake. It is, and everyone knows it.
They just didn't ship.
Right.
They just stopped talking about it.
Yeah, that's
okay.
A good point.
All right, I think that's totally fair. I think however we measure it, I think there's going to be a million different ways to measure it, but I think it'll be clear by the end of the year and indisputable by all four of us that they've pulled out of that market.
Yeah.
All right.
My second prediction is a copy over from last year. I believe that Chrome OS will gain full access to the Google Play Store. This should have happened in 2015. I believe Google just planned to and forgot. So I think in 2016, they're going to go ahead and do that.
I think it's possible.
All Android apps from the Play Store in Chrome OS.
I think you might have misunderstood the name of the segment. It's not stuff Brian would like to happen. It's stuff you believe is going to happen.
I completely disagree with the nature of what I'm doing here. My bonus
segment.
Are you
saying that you won't need app runtime for Chrome at all? It'll be natively, it will work.
I mean, the app runtime will still be there, but yeah, if you go into Chrome OS, I don't know if they'll do it on Chrome across, say, other platforms, but for Chrome OS,
just Chrome OS,
the Play Store will be available, and you'll be able to install at least the majority of Android applications directly from it and run them in a, from a consumer standpoint, kind of transparent way. Just immediately run.
Yeah, all right.
My bonus prediction for 2016, I feel like is kind of an easy win, but I want an extra point here. By the year's end, none of the major distributions, and by major, I'm going to say top 10 distributions, will be shipping and running Wayland by default.
None of them,
including Fedora, which has been claiming that they're going to run it by default for the last 3 years. So none of them will be running it by the end of 2016.
That's really? A difficult one. I don't know what I think about that.
I think it is a very unambiguous
win condition, though.
It's
so an easy
unambiguous win condition. I think I'm pretty confident that this is going to come true. I would very much like it if I were wrong, but I believe that I'm going to be right.
The problem with that win condition is that when you define top 10,
there's
like three. The number one on that list is going to be, you know, Ubuntu, SUSE, or Fedora.
Right.
Or Debian. Number 10 on that list is going to be like freaking Puppy Linux or something like that.
No, that's actually a good point. If you guys want to make it unambiguous, let's go with We can just go straight up. Ubuntu, SUSE, Fedora, without a doubt, none of those three will be shipping with Wayland by default by the end of the year.
By default. So if there's a separate version, like Mint all the versions, if there's Mint,
Right Wayland now it's edition, possible does that count or not count? To install and configure and get Wayland sort of running on Fedora, but out of the box doesn't run.
I'm saying if one of them has a
ISO you can download that for that ISO, it is the default. But so Fedora might have like a Wayland version.
If that particular version of Fedora is one of the top 10 Linux distros in terms of user base, I will totally accept that I would be wrong, but that's really not the case. So, or like if Kubuntu's pretty big. If Kubuntu were considered a top 10 and they went to Wayland, I would consider me as wrong on this.
Okay.
That's your bonus one.
His bonus one.
That's my bonus.
Oh, is that the bonus one? That was the bonus one. Okay. Yeah. Who's next? Shall I go?
You or me, pal?
Sure.
All right, I'll go. So, contrasting or complementing, I guess you'd say, with Jeremy's prediction about VR, I believe that in 2016, the Project Morpheus on PlayStation is going to have the highest number of sales and be considered the highest commercial success this year. It will not be the Oculus Rift, but specifically, it will be Morpheus.
All right.
It'll sell more than its competition.
I think it will sell more than Oculus Rift, and it will be considered just more of a market success. Like, we'll be seeing, I think, more and more games moving over to it. I think more people will be using about it. We'll see people talking about it more in the press. I think Morpheus is going to be successful primarily because it's got such a huge existing console user base, and it's going to be cheaper.
Would you have given this prediction before the Oculus Rift announced they were going to be $600?
Probably not. Well, maybe, because I think they've got the user base. They've got PlayStation 4 is just crushing it.
There are quite a lot of PC gamers, though, and people on PC gamers are more inclined to buy this kind of technology, surely.
They are, but they're not the mass market. PC gamers are not the mass market, and if you want to go out and buy an Oculus, you also have to have a really beefy machine. So somebody is new to VR, they want to get into it, they have to go and buy a $600 headset, and they have to go and buy a beefy PC. If you've already got like a $200 PlayStation 4, you can get into the VR game relatively cheaply.
So I absolutely love that both Jeremy and Jono are picking such an obvious loser here. And this is going to give me and Stuart a very rare chance of actually winning this.
All right. Prediction number two.
Yes.
I think Canonical is going to get, I think either a portion or all of Canonical is going to be sold in 2016.
This is definitely a reoccurring theme in these predictions.
Yeah. So I think my guess here, my prediction is that any part of Canonical could get sold. I think it's most likely going to be the cloud division. But I think Shuttleworth is going to sell Canonical this year or sell a part of it. My more detailed prediction is that Canonical will be split up into a couple of areas. It will be client and cloud.
Cloud and cloud.
The cloud piece will be sold off to a company. And then basically the client side of things will be basically on life support, kind of Ubuntu Foundation type stuff. There'll be somebody just kind of keeping a core set of people having it tick over. Or it may come under the proviso of the Shuttleworth Foundation. So
in a lot of ways, that's almost the opposite of Brian's prediction, that he thinks they're going to refocus on the desktop and you think they're going to put desktop basically into maintenance mode.
I think he's going to sell. He's definitely going to. My theory is that he's going to sell the cloud side primarily. But if they end up selling the desktop side, then I think that would count as something's going to be sold.
Okay. So something will be sold off from Canonical.
A division of Canonical.
Some piece of Canonical.
Interesting.
That seems reasonable.
What do you think? Do you think that makes sense?
Honestly, that's reasonable. It's measurable. I'll go with it.
I think it makes more sense.
Language?
Yeah, no, it makes more sense than the previous one, given the PC games outsell console games.
Yeah. So. Yeah, I'm kind of bummed out that you made a reasonable prediction here, Jono, because I think that stands a really good chance of coming true, and I really want to beat you. This is really important for my self-worth.
Morpheus is going to be more successful.
What will be quite annoying is that, again, that's something I predicted last year, and it didn't happen, so...
I just like it noted that, you know, I came second in the predictions. And by a rabbit's whisker.
All right. What's your bonus?
My bonus one is that I think that in 2016, so crowdfunding, there's going to be a major crowdfunding campaign. And more specifically, I think Star Citizen, that's an ongoing campaign. I think they've raised about 105 million so far. The next one down is 25 million. My prediction for my bonus one is that there will be a campaign this year that will raise at least $200 million. So basically pretty much about double what Star Citizen's got so far.
$200 million.
Yes, $200 million.
Via crowdfunding.
Via crowdfunding. It can be Indiegogo, it can be Kickstarter, it can be somewhere else. The idea of people putting money into a shared campaign, you know, there will be at least $200 million raised this year.
Huh. All right. Wow. That's measurable. I accept it.
It is measurable.
You see how they're all measurable?
Yeah,
you see how
I
follow the rules?
I like that.
That is all measurable.
I think you're going to be crazy wrong on that, but hey, I like how measurable it is, so rock on.
Because it is a precipitous drop-off from Star Citizen. The next one is 25 million.
Yeah.
So I was tempted to go 150, but then I thought I'll get an enormous amount of crap.
No.
Yeah,
it's not 200. The Price is Right.
You've gone
this
big.
Is not the price.
Instead of going high, yeah. $200 million.
$200 million.
$200 million US dollars.
I actually think that we're going to get at least one of those. I think that we'll probably have more.
Oh. Well, come on, pony up, big man. Say that we're going to get three of them.
I'm only committing to the 200. I see your reindeer games, Brian Lundgren.
Are
you assuming
games.
That's going to be either Kickstarter or Indiegogo?
I think it can be either or anywhere.
Wondering what happens if someone sets up a Chinese crowdfunding site.
Yeah, it could be anywhere. My prediction is about crowdfunding.
Hey,
not about
Stuart, Jono isn't racist like some people.
So,
okay,
right. Three correct predictions then, just to finish off the segment. The first one, now I'm not sure about my first one because it's possible that it's already true for the three of you, especially given a discussion we have had elsewhere in this show about coin. So the prediction is this, but if you're already doing this, I've got another one, right? The prediction is by the end of the year, by the end of 2016, the four of us and at least one member of each of our families will routinely not carry cash at all.
Define routinely.
I can guarantee you that's not going to be true. I carry cash all the time.
So do I.
And
yeah.
I plan on... I'm not going to do it out of spite for your prediction.
So I almost never have cash. If I don't know I'm going to need it and I explicitly go to an ATM to have it, on a day-to-day basis, I have no money.
Right. So I think the other three of us will be like that. If you think I need cash for a specific reason, you'll still go and get some, but you won't think, oh, I need to have cash in my wallet. You won't pick up cash on the way out anywhere, stuff like that. That's my prediction.
So all four of us and at least one member of each of our families.
The idea there was not because we're technologically ahead of the rest of things. I want this to be a thing which at least partially applies to normal people, but the reason it's at least one member is so I don't have to nominate someone specific.
I think you're correct in that the march is inexorably in this direction. 2016 is optimistic.
I
agree with the spirit of it.
Go big or go
home.
When
you come over, Ack, as well. When you come over, Ack, I want to show you the inside of Erica's purse.
There's an offer you don't get.
I'm sure if that's a euphemism, I don't know, or I don't know what's going on right now. I'm a little scared.
Part of the reason I put this in is that I hate not having cash. I know people who are already in a position where they just take a card out, or a few people who just take their iPhone, assholes. But I like having cash, right? The only fully liquid security. I like cash.
Yeah,
and
I do as well.
I would like to, I think I might be in a position by the end of this year where I've just switched. Seriously, man, contactless is excellent. I can't believe you lot don't like it. It's just the best thing.
I will say, I went to Iceland 2 years ago now, so kind of a long time ago, technology-wise, and I never, and I'm not exaggerating or being hyperbolic here, never saw a coin or a dollar the entire 2 weeks I was there. I don't even know what their money looks like.
Yeah.
No one, not a single person anywhere used cash.
So
it was amazing.
That's my prediction.
All right. Right. Good prediction.
Okay.
I'm sorry to say, dude, you are definitely not going to win that one. You forgot how living in the Stone Ages and deathly afraid of the man I am. I carry coins and money everywhere, and that's not going to change.
I kind of picture you having a room that's just stacked up MREs and stuff for the
Also, you forget how spiteful we are.
Yeah,
just to make sure that you don't win.
I will work hard all year.
I'm more than happy for you.
I'm
going to
buy a bigger wallet because of this.
To shackle yourselves to
you know what we should do, guys.
Paper. Then I'm fine.
We should
with
all
that.
We should all show up at scale. Each of us just carrying a sack full of quarters and just do everything. Just sacks of quarters, all scale.
You don't even need to do that. If you just go into a bar and buy a beer with a $50 note, they give you all the changing quarters so you can tip them properly.
No, Stuart, no. I don't want you to fail on this. I want you to fail spectacularly. I want to buy everything
as
with
Brian
hard
pays for dinner
nickel-clad change all year long just to show you up.
I'm going to ask my granddad to send me his coin purse, like his little coin wallet thing.
Hey, Brian,
just so I
what's
can...
in the bag? Oh, I've got 100 million models of Abraham Lincoln. Is that okay?
So handsome.
So what's your second one?
Second prediction, Microsoft will open source MS Edge, the browser.
Okay. All right. I think it's entirely possible.
I actually
possible.
Thought they were going to be reasonable. Doing that anyway, to be honest with you.
They have discontinued support as of today for IE10 and below. Yeah. Hooray. I think by the end of the year, they'll have open sourced Edge.
It almost seems inevitable, but...
That's a good prediction, I think, though. To come back on something that I accused Brian of less than 5 minutes ago, I'm not sure whether this is a prediction or something I just fervently want to happen, but it would but it would massively demonstrate that the people who you hear about at Microsoft who are saying, yeah, we're going down a new direction, we're not the MS of old, that those people are in control, and that would be a good thing.
It's also, frankly, I think that's how they compete, right? Yeah. So
I will say I like the prediction, though.
Good prediction. Both of these also measurable.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. See.
Yep.
So let us down on your third one.
Well, my original third one was Canonical will be out of the phone business by the end of the year, or they might be unambiguously in the top three phone OSs. Right. Just as a little bit of wiggle room, just in case some massive phone manufacturer walks in the door and buys
which is not
going to happen. But I think they'll be out of the business. Right.
Yeah.
But that's exactly the same prediction as Brian.
But out of the business, once again, though, because he hedged his with could sell the division. Are you saying they just will be out of the business?
That's Canonical being out of the phone business. The fact that Canonical's product is still in the phone business does not mean Canonical are.
The spirit
of the prediction is different there.
Yeah. I'm going to say it's going to fail. I'm not going to say it's going to make a bunch of money and they're going to sell it off for a giant chunk of change. They might sell it off, but it will be an unambiguous failure.
If they're going to sell that division, they're not going to be selling product. They're going to be selling people, right?
Right.
Yeah.
So that's the way it's going to work. And those people will probably go to work for a company building some other client-oriented product.
Yeah, it'll be in the same way that HP bought Palm. It's an acqui-hire, basically.
Yes.
I am astounded at how much our predictions aligned this year compared to other years.
We have become one.
The singularity has been reached.
Stuart's not done.
Since my bonus prediction was already on Brian's list, I have a second bonus prediction. Frankly, even more of a reach than the cash one, and even more something I would like to see happen than the Edge one.
Awesome.
But it is this.
I like it already.
In 2016, 5 inches or less smartphones will outsell larger phones.
That's a boring prediction.
It's not boring.
I
thought they already did.
No. You can't buy
I don't know if they do or not. It just sounds boring.
You can't buy a 5-inch smartphone on the market. My OnePlus X is like the smallest phone on the market, and it's 5 inches. So it counts.
Dude, that was the Phantom Menace of predictions.
Yeah.
So much build up and then just disappointment.
I'm just not excited about this one at all. No,
that's terrible. Negative.
Yeah. I mean,
it wasn't even in the list, only for the fact that Brian came up with negative mine first.
Hey, I wrote that in an article that published long ago, so suck it.
Yeah, but you assume that we read your articles.
Yeah,
we
know you do.
Do
whatever, Mr. Comments on my Reddit AMA. I know you read it.
We had one comment that was sarcastic.
But we are talking about
it was one word.
This is not even about people us reading one another's outside things. Jeremy wasn't on the show and didn't even listen to the show he wasn't on. The rest of the stuff.
That's a good
point.
Which
says a lot about our show.
I have since listened, though.
Hey, good job, big guy.
Yeah.
All right, are we going to accept Stuart's terribly lame prediction? I mean, it's measurable. It's just lame.
I think we should accept it, and we'll just give him more shit when...
If you're willing to compile a list of all phones and then do the math and then give us an actual spreadsheet with said data, I will accept it.
I accept. Oh, that's exciting already. It got more boring and that made it exciting.
What has to be done? In order for the stupid trend towards phones the size of tea trays to get reversed, I'm more than happy to compile a spreadsheet if I can make that.
I will concur with the sentiment in that I hate the large phones, but...
I love the large phones.
Yeah, me too.
I love it. It's
tablets.
It's good.
Right.
I have big hands, big pockets.
So, that's our prediction for 2016.
So that is our predictions... Once again, I think we did this last year. We want to hear what your predictions are in the forum. So go to community.badvoltage.org and let us know what you think is going to happen in 2016.
A little while ago, my wife Erica told me she bought me this new device called a coin. It's a single card that you put all of your credit cards onto, so you only have to carry one card around, she enthusiastically exclaimed. I have to say, I was rather intrigued. I have what can be conservatively described as a George Costanza wallet. It is a bulging mess of a thing, and the idea of removing all of those pesky cards and having just one, well, that seems like a pretty good thing to me. It seems like the coin took an eternity to be finished and shipped, but it eventually arrived a few weeks ago, and I've been giving it a whirl. Physically, it looks like a credit card with a small e-ink-style screen on it. It's a tiny bit thicker than a regular card, and it looks really rather cool. The card comes with a little swipey thing that you plug into your phone's headphone jack. You then install the coin app, and it guides you through how to add your cards. Essentially, you select the type of card, such as a credit or debit card, and then you swipe it, and it stores it in the app. Finally, you sync the stored cards via Bluetooth to the coin card itself. At this point, you're good to go. The coin also asks you to set a Morse-style pattern of short and long presses that you use to unlock the card. This is obviously designed for the case where you lose or someone nicks your coin. You don't want their grubby fingers all over your cards. Now, the overall coin experience is, well, mixed. Here's what works well. The card itself is well made, looks cool, and the integration with the app is top notch. It is stunning to think that a little computer, Bluetooth receiver, and other gubbins is in such a thin form factor. When I used the coin to buy things, it was quick and easy. I unlock the coin, swipe it, pay for my stuff, and I'm good to go. Sadly, the story isn't quite that simple. Unfortunately, the coin doesn't work everywhere, and the coin people acknowledge this. In my testing, I've used it in about 8 times so far, and it didn't work in one location. Now, you may think, no big deal, it's pretty decent, but the nature of it not working 100% everywhere means that I'm still carrying around my other cards. I don't want to be in a situation where I run out of gas, my credit card doesn't work, and I don't have an alternative backup card to use, so it rather defeats the purpose. The other thing is that from what I can tell, I can't store all of my other cards on it. My medical insurance, Costco card, dental card, Freebirds burrito card, bar tickets, etc. Honestly, there's not that many credit and debit cards in my wallet overall. The bulk is all of these other cards, and it seems the coin doesn't really work there. The other issue is that the coin is merely a magnetic swipe and not a chip and pin type affair. With the world all moving over to chip and pin, it seems the coin may be focused on the last breaths of a dying breed of cards. So overall, the coin feels like a really well-executed concept, but not something I can easily map well to my wider card-consuming world, which is a shame, because I love the premise and concept of it all. So, what is the Bad Voltage verdict? While I love the spirit of the coin, I'm not sure I would recommend that you all go out and get one as a must-have product.
Great technology and well executed, but sadly not quite nailing the problem it seeks to solve in the way that I'd hoped.
Kind of friggin' intriguing. So let me get this straight. So you whip this little bad boy out, right? And
yep.
And now how do you select which card? Is that a little touch screen that you select which card you're going about to use, and then
it's basically swipe it? Got a button. It's basically got a button, and it cycles through the different cards that you got on there.
Oh, okay.
And it shows you have like a 4-letter kind of code for it. So for example, you know, you could say Visa or debit or whatever.
Sure.
And then it shows you the last 4 digits and then the little code that's in the back of the card as well.
Well, that is kind of groovy. Have you tried it in an ATM machine?
Never. I have not tried it in an ATM.
Do you think it would work?
The coin FAQ says, can you use it in an ATM? And the answer is theoretically, yes. On the other hand...
Theoretically? Wait, does it actually say theoretically on their website?
No, it doesn't. But it says, yeah, it should work in ATMs. But it's also slightly thicker than an ordinary card, right? And I've had cards eaten by ATMs in the past.
Yeah, me
too. I'm not at all convinced I want to put this slightly thicker thing in and then watch some crappy piece of ATM technology munch it up.
From what I've read, it'll work in ATMs that you swipe pretty well, but the ones that actually take your card, it's a little bit problematic.
So
any
most
newer ATMs, ones. Yeah. But that's the thing with this. There's a weird dichotomy with this product to me in that, like you said in your review, it's amazing what they fit into a credit card-sized device. But the fact that they didn't do chip and PIN, it doesn't do EMV right, and it doesn't do track one at all, which means you can't use it at the fact that you got one only out of 8 is actually surprising. The no track one alone means quite a bit of stores won't accept it, even with the magnetic swipe. So it seems like while they're so technology on one side, they're so not technology on the other side. It just seems like a weird decision. The thing that's interesting, because I do like the idea as well, plastic seems to solve all of those problems, but it's not going to ship for like another 2 months.
But the other thing as well is, and what I didn't get into in my review is, of course, cell phones with Apple Pay and Samsung Pay and Android, Google Pay or Google Wallet.
Right.
You know, a big chunk of this is just going to, I think, go away because people are just going to use their phone.
Different thing, though. Part of the reason that I like this as a concept is it's not a thing where they hold your account, you charge your account from other sources of money, and then you pay out of that account, right? Instead, it's literally just a clone of your card. Part of the reason they don't do chip and PIN is because Samsung Pay is an app.
Android Pay is the exact same thing. You put your card into it, and it uses whatever card you put into it.
That's literally identical.
The money is still running through Google. You cannot use Google Pay without Google knowing everything that you've purchased. You can use coin because it's just like using your card. It's like the bank issuing you 2 cards. You know,
I thought if you put a card into Google Pay and didn't put it into your Google Wallet, that it would just charge the card
directly. That's my understanding. Yeah. It just charged the card directly.
So it's only if you use the Google Wallet.
I may be wrong about that. It's possible that Stuart might be wrong. Yeah, part of the point here is that as Jono said, what this is a very good implementation of yesterday's technology. Part of the reason they don't do chip and PIN is that you can't just clone a card by reading the thing out of the PIN, because reading the chip.
Plastic does chip and PIN.
Yeah.
So plastic's a newer version of coin, it does chip and PIN.
More possible. The one thing that, but you can just clone a magnetic strip by just running it through a magnetic strip reader and then printing a magnetic strip with the same information on it. You can't copy someone's chip because that's hard.
I don't know how they do it, but it definitely says it fully supports chip and PIN.
The one thing that Coin does do, which I didn't test, was the whole, what's it, NFV payment type thing where you just tap the thing.
It says it does NFC, yeah.
Yeah, okay. NFC, yeah. I didn't give that a shot, though, because frankly...
I never used that. You know, yeah.
I never use it. Yeah. It just seems odd to me. I'm a Luddite in that world.
Without wishing to be mean, peeps, the reason you don't use it is that I don't think it doesn't seem all that widespread in the US, and therefore cars don't do it.
It's all over the place.
I have not seen a POS system that didn't support it in years.
Yeah, yeah. Every single fast food joint I go to 27 times a day has them all, that's for sure.
So when you take your card out of your wallet, you can either just touch it on the thing and walk away, or you can swipe through a thing and just sign your name. And you prefer to swipe through the thing and sign your name every time.
I actually don't swipe my name and sign it. I use it as a PIN. I always use it more as a debit when I do it, just for that extra layer of protection.
I swipe.
I think it's force of nature with me. There's no reason I don't, because all my cards support it. Really don't think I've even done it once.
Because we're humans, and that's how humans work. So here's a little interesting tidbit. So I used to work, one of my very first jobs out of high school was I went to work at Microsoft for a product called Microsoft Wallet, which was literally an ActiveX control. This was like back in 98, something like that. It was an ActiveX control, which is awesome because I don't even know if that exists still. But it was this ActiveX control that would store all of your credit cards in it. So you'd say, okay, I want to add in a Visa card to it. This ActiveX control, you type in all your information and you now have your Visa card in there. And so whenever you go to a website that would support Microsoft Wallet, you could choose between all your different cards, your MasterCard, your Visa, your debit card and whatnot. It would show a nice little picture of it and it'd allow you to buy things with it. Here's the thing though. That was a friggin' stupid idea back then, and it remains a friggin' stupid idea now, whether you're doing it on your phone, a card that stores a bunch of them, whatever. I really don't see the point of it. For me, really, like Jono was saying, it would be cool if I could consolidate my Chipotle card. Well, not my Chipotle card. I don't want to get Ebola or whatever they're selling now. But
I don't think they're selling
my donut card, my bread store card, and whatever unhealthy cards I have going on. If I could consolidate all those into a card, friggin' awesome. My wallet would be wicked small. But really, how many Visa and debit cards do I have? Do I have like 80 of them sticking in my wallet? No, come on. And if I do, I'm a ridiculous human being that should probably burn in hell for all time and eternity. So realistically, I don't see the point in any of these solutions, which includes Samsung Pay, which includes Apple Pay and Google Pay and Microsoft Wallet that I worked on way back when. It's just a pointless exercise that does nothing.
So that's what I'm under the impression that, also going back to plastic, they're trying to do any of the cards that just have a barcode on the back will work with plastic.
Really?
I don't know if they'll work with coin. So it'll do anything that's contactless, any NFC, any magnetic strip, any chip and pin, and any barcode. Because
and
on the plastic front, it'll even show a picture of your face if you wanted to when they charge it, because the whole front is e-ink.
Plastic.
Really?
The thing that I think says,
if they got this to work at 100% of the places flawlessly, and I don't care if it was coin or plastic or ACK comes up with one. If it worked 100% of the time, I think it would be useful, because I do like the idea that if I forget my card somewhere and my phone goes out of range, that it locks all my cards and no one can use them or even see them.
That's cool.
I think that's
so
the
that
key
alone
thing.
I think is really interesting, but it's as Jono said, if it's not 100%, it might as well be 0%, because then you're carrying this and all your other cards.
It's weird, because I'm in two minds about this, because I think it has to be 100%. It has to work everywhere. And what I found discouraging, I get the fact that the coin doesn't support the chip and pin thing, and that's fine. That's just a limitation on the actual technology. The fact that the magnetic stripe, the thing that it's designed to do, doesn't work everywhere.
Yeah. Right?
Every magnetic swipe reader suggests to me that the technology isn't mature enough.
That's because of Type 1 and Type 2 cards.
Why decided not to support Type 1 is mind-boggling.
It's just ludicrous.
I don't understand
why. I can imagine this being useful.
Brian's point about just how many debit cards do you have is a perfectly reasonable one. But if you could also put your Subway card on it and your gym membership card and so on, that'd be pretty cool.
That would be cool.
It seems to me that the thing is as well, is the notion of a card as a form of identity is so antiquated in itself. Like, in my mind, what I want is I want an app on my phone that has all of my cards in it, basically. And then you can engage with them in different ways. So, for example, when I look at my Freebirds burrito card, I can't go and look at how many burritos I need to eat before I get a free one without going to their website and installing their app. And the point is that I don't want to have to install an app for every single thing I want to do, because that's a pain in the ass when you change phones and you've got to go and re-authenticate with them and whatever else. In my mind, if we could have basically the concept of an app with all of your cards that live in it, and then there's just a standard.
See, marketing companies don't want that, though, because the burrito company wants your information.
Right.
Well, that's the problem with it.
Your idea is better for us, but it does not behoove marketing companies.
Even putting that aside,
precisely,
it's quite likely that the card does not contain the number of burritos you bought. The card's just basically an ID number. and the number of burritos you bought is stored in their database. So when you swipe the card,
yeah,
it just
I
goes.
Agree, yeah.
So being able to put the card
on
your
phone.
Well,
you'd probably want some kind of universal API where you could just, that would work, but that's
just
never,
look it
that's
up. That's
happened.
The thing, like, I basically want to be able to go up and have my phone and, you know, for my phone to interact with the retailer with, like,
yeah,
some kind of wireless thing. But then I want to be able to look and get more information than just the card. Like, if we could have everything in one place, the fact that I can't put my medical insurance cards on a coin. I can't, at least as far as I'm aware, maybe you can, I just didn't realize.
I don't think you
but
can.
All of my burrito type stuff. Yeah. So in conclusion, the fact that it doesn't work 100% of the time and it doesn't actually support all of my cards means that I probably wouldn't recommend it.
And it's supporting dying technology, exactly as you said. I mean, even if they got it to be perfect, you're still in a world where you're like, hooray, now I can replace all my magnetic stripe cards, and I haven't used a magnetic stripe card
for
10 years.
Because plastic supports it, you would go under the assumption that the coin 3.0 would support it.
That seems like a fair guess.
Here is an extra concern. Plastic don't currently support contactless, and they don't actually support chip and pin. They say in the coming months we'll have updates regarding payment network compatibility, which sounds a great deal like depends on who your bank is. But put that
the card's
all
not
to
released
one side.
Yet.
Right? Put that to one side.
They're optimistically saying the card will be released in May. So.
Contactless payment support will be supported by plastic and activated by an over-the-air update shortly after launch. I'm not sure I want the plastic card with all my money on it to receive OTAs. If I'm honest.
That is an interesting concept.
That
is very, very true. I'll tell you what, I'll get a plastic when it comes out and we'll compare it.
That sounds pretty cool. I'm not going to get any of them until
the
one of them.
Ashley Madison.
Until one of them supports ActiveX controls. Until then, I'm out.
Do you remember we got into trouble a couple of shows ago about talking over each other?
Yeah, we've done that a ton. Maybe we should try to do it less. We could give that a shot. That'd be cool.
I think we should try that,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Hey, Jono.
Yes.
Nice job waiting until I finish talking, by the way.
Thank you, Brian.
Now on the show, we have George Castro, who is Cloud Community Liaison for Ubuntu. All right, so you're in the cloud half of the company rather than the phones and desktops and whatever part of the company, yeah?
Yeah, that's me.
Yeah, that's
welcome
him.
To the show, George. How's it going?
It's been a while. It's almost been exactly a year since I saw you guys last, actually.
Well, you're going to be at scale, same as the rest of us, next week, so you can come and watch Bad Voltage live. Yes, you can.
I'm really looking forward to it. It's going to be a good one.
Yeah, he can.
But by the way, you kind of kicked ass last year, just to put that out there. Just
you guys, you guys were okay. I mean,
yeah, we did all right. We were all right, but you really made the show. So, you know, mad props, my friend.
Should be our tagline, Bad Voltage live, just okay.
We're okay.
So, Mr. Castro, one of the things you do a lot of is Juju stuff, right? But from my point of view, I'm assuming that most people listening to the show will have a rough idea what Juju is. But
do you think that's
30-second summary?
I don't know that that's true.
Well, this
true.
Is why I said given this is. Oh, you think? Okay, so give them the 30-second summary then, George.
Sure. So, let's see. How do I say this? Trying to think of a clever way to say it, but not sounding too clever. No, Juju is what we call a service modeling platform / used to call it orchestration. But that's like really the kind of complex marketing kind of like that's what it says on the website. But
what it really is
a way for you to model what a set of services looks like on a cloud. So if you think about it in the old days when Axe started writing web apps, right? He installed a LAMP stack like on his computer, right? And at first you had to install Apache and then MySQL and then PHP or Python or whatever. And then you set all that up. Then you could finally start writing your app, right? And then meta packages and task cell came out eventually, right? And you could just say, give me a LAMP stack. And it would install the whole entire thing, right? On your laptop. And then you can kind of iterate quickly. What Juju does is this, but over a whole bunch of nodes or a cloud. So instead of just having one machine or whatever, having all the stuff installed, which is like what packaging does, Juju kind of models the relationships that these services have when they're sitting on multiple machines on different racks and things like that. So I guess the equivalent of that would be, it's like doing apt-get install lamp stack, except this time you're doing it over multiple nodes, and you're doing it at the service level as opposed to the machine level. So we try not to care too much about machines, and that allows you to like easily and quickly horizontally scale a certain part of a stack, right? So if you're doing like a Hadoop stack and you're like, oh no, I need more things to crunch this set of numbers or whatever, you can grow that little bit, right, elastically.
So it's kind of like a like visual UML modeling only for nodes within a cloud infrastructure?
Yeah, except never mention UML again.
Okay.
Like, oh man, every time I hear the word UML, human readable, whatever. So the idea is like kind of a topology of a set of services. Now, the reason it's so hard to explain is services are very service specific, you know what I mean? Like you can't just, it's very difficult to say, you know, this is a model of what, you know, a microservices web-based web application looks like, right? Like it really depends on how you do it, right? So using it in a general sense is kind of really difficult to kind of explain it that way. So I like to use examples based on whether you're a Rails developer or you do Hadoop or OpenStack or something like that. So what it does is you kind of model how those services interact and talk to each other, right? So in a simple case of a blog, it's like, hey, I'm WordPress. I expect a MySQL database, right? And my MySQL says, well, I'm a database. I provide a MySQL interface, right? And then when you start interconnecting those services with each other is how you kind of build complex topologies of things. So
what I'm hearing you saying is it's kind of like a visual UML kind of thing for online services.
It does have a GUI, it could be visual, but... Most of the interaction.
Hey, George, stick a sock in it for a minute. The super wise Stuart Langridge has something to say.
Well, it's more a question. Historically, I mean, I've looked at Juju in the past because, as George notes, I used to have to apt-get install a lamp stack. And these days, what I do is I apt-get install a lamp stack. Nothing's changed. Historically, I looked at Juju for stuff like this, but you gave the example there of a blog, right? I want to spin up a simple WordPress blog or something. And I go, right, Juju install WordPress. And it would go, oh, well, you need MySQL for that. And you need an Apache server. And you need a load balancing front end. Or something, and then it would spin up four cloud machines to do that, and I'd be like, no, stop, hang on, right, just cram it all onto one tiny DigitalOcean node, please, or a VM from Bytemark or something. I'm sure if you're Netflix and you're deploying something with Juju and you say, oh, well, we've gone from 48,000 cloud instances to 48,006, it doesn't matter. It matters a big deal when you're going from one to seven. Is Juju really designed for people doing huge cloud deployments, or can real people, you know, normal people use it?
That's a great question. So usually what we usually do by default is we, if you just say Juju deploy MySQL, it will ask the cloud, hey, give me a machine. And then you have like a default machine size configured, right? Whatever blah, M2 medium or whatever it is. But for density reasons, and this is why we can get OpenStack fully deployed on one machine now, which is like really awesome. What you would do in your case is you would tell Juju, every time I spawn something, put it in a container by default instead. And then that would give you a LexD container for you to just put all that stuff in there. And then that would all easily fit on a DigitalOcean machine. But generally speaking, most of the people who are using Juju right now are kind of using it in, they are doing a lot of high density things in containers. But in the case of the, you know, is it for me to do my simple WordPress blog? Yes, but generally speaking, the person who is running a WordPress blog selling service who needs to be able to quickly spin and pack as much of those onto one server. That's kind of who it's more modeled after.
Okay.
However, there is something really nice about being able to spin things up how they are in a real cloud. So one of the problems you had with apt-get installing your own LAMP stack on your laptop, right, is you'd...
No, wait. You said the phrase, in a real cloud. Can you explain to us what a real cloud is?
So a real cloud is a whole bunch of machines that you can access via an API. So something like Amazon or Azure or OpenStack or your own pile of bare metal machines.
Okay. So the public cloud stuff. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. I'm with you now. I'm just like real cloud. Because, you know, you think of cloud and you kind of think of it as like, well, that's just kind of an abstract concept that people put out there to say other people's computers. And so when you say a real cloud, you're like, well, what the F is that? So, okay. So from your point of view, a real cloud is the big commercially accessible public cloud setups like Amazon. Okay. Got it.
I'm talking about infrastructure as a service cloud. Not, hey, got I know it. What Dropbox is. Right.
Okay, you can keep talking now. I just really wanted to get that clarified because I've never heard anyone define real cloud before. So thank you.
It's all just kind of, the term itself cloud is really loaded these days, right? That can be personal cloud. That can be, you know, file syncing, I think, is how a lot of people think cloud. A lot of people think iMessages, iCloud, whatever. But when we say cloud in the Ubuntu context, 99% of the time we mean infrastructure as a service or something like OpenStack or MaaS.
Right, yeah, so I have a question. If I'm deploying just like a Node app for a client, last time I looked at this, there seemed to be Juju charms set up, individual pre-written recipes for a bunch of third-party applications. I want to deploy WordPress or I want to deploy a bunch of Hadoop stuff or whatever. Great. But I don't really want to have to sit down and write charms to do deployment. I don't understand them. I'm not sure I want to bind Juju to that extent.
Right.
How do I experiment with Juju without hurling myself bodily into the world of Juju?
So this is actually a problem we've been tackling this whole time, right? We used to say, hey man, make a charm, and you'd be like, no, and that was that.
Correct. Nailed it.
And it also made reusability hard, right? Because, like, for example, each charm that needed Java, right, they would go and install Java their own way, apt-get install, give you an option for Oracle Java or whatever. And any time a change happened, we had to make that change across all the Java charms, for example. So the new way of writing Juju charms is what we call charm build, is which we, you would write your charm and you would include layers that we've pre-selected for you that are reusable. And anytime there's an update, you would just rebuild your charm, and then charm build spits out a pre-made charm for you. So this is really awesome now because we have Node. We have a Node layer, like a Rails layer, a PHP layer. And that means that your charm ends up being about 60 lines of code for like a typical LAMP app. So your charm code would basically say, include Node, maybe another layer, another piece, whatever your application stack has. And then you would make little stubs with your logic in there saying like, when database shows up, do these four things. In kind of an abstract way, and the layer does all the work. Then you type charm build, then it spits out a charm, then you just deploy that locally on your laptop to rev, or you can push that up to other people. Yeah.
It's kind of like packages and meta packages, except even higher level.
Right, because packages put bits on disk, right? That's like all they do, right? And then they have maintainer scripts that kind of like do unholy shit to like make stuff happen.
So the Juju is just the unholy shit then on top of that.
Well, when you're expected to have a relationship with something that's on another machine, and there's like firewalls and I need to talk in this protocol over this port, that's basically what Juju does, right? Lets you define like a loose coupling between something on one box and something on another box, and then you put together the Lego bits. And then bundle all that up as your quote-unquote infrastructure or your huge application deployment.
Okay, All right, I kind of get it. Is like the claim to fame that you get up and running with something faster, or that you get to do a visual modeling? Like, what's the goal of it when I look at it? Like, is that the goal? Faster to production?
Reusability and speed, I think, because it's nice, because unlike some of the older config management tools that we learned a lot from, and we can consume those as well, we force you to separate the logic of the service from your site-specific bits, which means that once somebody figures out a cool feature in OpenStack that we want to enable for everybody, we do it in one place. We do it in the Juju Charm, and then everybody gets that. So like every time we have a large customer, like say a Best Buy or a Walmart or something, has a feature that they want in the Juju Charm to enable IPv6 or some kind of Ceph feature or something like that, that enables us to put all that logic of that deployment into the charm, and then everybody can use that. So me, that's the best part. The reusable bits are important because in the past, when I was a sysadmin, someone would be like, hey man, I figured out to do foo rbaz, and they would give you something and it would have like hard-coded IP addresses in there, or it assumed that you had this that or this. Now this kind of lets us break it down to like a real like Legos block style bit, where you could say, this gets me 90% there, and this is the 10% I want to customize. And that enables us to like really get people up and running in OpenStack. I could do a real OpenStack deployment in about 30 minutes, and that's like real. That's not DevStack or anything like
that. Have you ever done the OpenStack challenge stuff that Intel does every OpenStack summit? You guys should do that. I would love to see how this stacks up against other things. I know like they've done them 3 times so far, and I know SUSE has just conquered them all 3 times, and no one else has even come close. And I would love to see how a Juju implementation would stack up and go in terms of getting things up and running faster. Like that would be interesting. You guys should do that.
Yeah, I think the problem, I think, with that contest is at the end of the day, and we do this now too, it really, just about all the OpenStack installers now just basically DD the disk on the node. And then that's right. Like most of the thing.
that's a good chunk of it. Well, I think they did a little bit more. I know the first year they did that, they actually had these rules in there where if you did certain things, you'd get bonus points. So you could deduct time from your total score. So the team from SUSE goes in there, and they did a totally good job of it normally anyway, but they did all of the bonus things. So they ended up actually with a total elapsed time of installation of like -3 minutes or something like that because of all the extra bonuses. So it's kind of hard to tell, but I would love to see you guys get involved with stuff like that, because it's really hard to actually measure up and say, okay, how do you get things like OpenStack or Docker instances or LAMP stacks or whatnot installed quickly, unless we can find a way to measure them against all the other methods of installing the same basic thing. And so I don't know, that's the only like thing I know of is Intel's, I think they call it Rule the Stack, where they do that thing. That's the only thing I know of.
Yeah, I think Paige last time, he was like, I was in a session, I didn't even know there was a contest. And I was like, oh, you totally could have won. So I'll definitely ask him.
Well, if you would like an opportunity to compete against the 3-time ruling champion of SUSE, feel free at the next OpenStack Summit for Ubuntu maybe to show up and do something.
Can you guys do live upgrades of an OpenStack?
Oh, we can do everything in the entire world, which I say not really knowing because I don't really do OpenStack crap. let me ask you this. I really want to ask you the most important topic about all this stuff. Who the hell came up with the name for Jujus and Charms? I really want to know who is responsible for naming it such a thing.
I think it was Mark, because for a while we were Ensemble, and I remember we were trying to...
That's a terrible name. That's just terrible.
We were trying to come up with like the slang for each bit, right? So like, you know, the charms would be like scores, like musical scores, and then like, you know, individual bits of code would be called notes. And
yeah, no, I don't like that either. Yeah, no, that's pretty bad. So Mark is responsible for naming it Jujus and talking about charms. Got it. So
I mean, I believe so. I mean, they did a whole thing. As far as I know,
Wait. Are you kidding me here? They did a whole thing on this? The whole thing? Jeremy, can you believe this? They did a whole thing. The whole thing.
I believe it.
Right. Hey, if you finished being mean to George,
I have totally. By the way, George, here. You are the funnest person in the whole world to be mean to. You are awesome. Stuart, go ahead and talk about whatever you got, because right. I'm bored of judges.
My actual question is this. Judges sounds amazing. Every time someone describes it to me, I think this is brilliant. Sounds like a really good idea. But I don't know anyone who's using it. Right, Ubuntu, massively popular in the cloud. You know, everyone who's running Docker is running Ubuntu. It's the most popular Vagrant box. It's over 50, you know, more cloud instances than everyone else put together, all that stuff. But hardly anyone's using Juju, as far as I can tell. Why?
So, yeah, so that is a good question. I think a lot of it is, I think a lot of people, there are certain ways that people have done scale. And I think there's a new... I don't want to say paradigm shift because that sounds so lame, but like there's like this, like if you look at the natural evolution of things, right, as far as automation was concerned, right, first, you know, it was SSH in a for loop, right, and then it was kind of the first generation of config management tools, right, and then out of that we got like Puppet and Chef, and now containers came in and kind of threw a wrench in how people did stuff. I think we're finally reaching the complexity in systems at scale that the whole idea of doing things at a machine kind of level, like, you know, this machine is coming up, I'm going to make it do this and that. When you're talking about numbers in the tens and 20s and 30s of thousands, right, especially with containers, right, geometrically increases that number. Just a level of complexity means that you have to start looking at modeling systems and like in a more service-oriented fashion, as opposed to, you know, hey, I have X machines doing this, and X machines doing that, and X machines doing that. And I think you're starting to see that as well. Like, if you look at the latest Puppet product and Red Hat buying Ansible and all the stuff that HashiCorp is doing especially, I think that, I don't want to say this is the future in config management, because that also sounds kind of weird. You know, config management...
douchey. Super duper douchey, yeah.
Config management doesn't like go away, right? But I think just this level kind of, it seems like the natural evolution to move to more like dynamic systems that are modeled in that fashion as opposed to machines. I know that answer sounds weird.
No, it sounds like a fantastic non-answer. I have one final wrap-up answer for you. During the year 2016, your friend and our Stuart Langridge is predicting that part of Canonical will be sold off, possibly even the cloud portion of the company. Do you think that makes sense? And why do you think you should not answer that because of the company you work for?
I didn't predict that.
Didn't you?
No, he predicted that Ubuntu Phone would no longer exist.
I thought the prediction was that it was going to be sold, or that was Jono.
Jono. Never mind. Jono predicted that one division would be sold off. Right. Probably that's cloud. Right. Sorry, so actually, we did have two predictions about Canonical. So what do you think about either?
Jono would bail. That's what I predicted. Just kidding. So I don't really know. I'm just some guy who works there. But I do know that. From talking to people who are in cloud and in servers and all that stuff, to them, the desktop is like their everyday working station, right? Like you without Ubuntu desktop, Ubuntu cloud, like would not be, I don't feel as entrenched as it is, right? Because there's a lot of values and stuff that like came with normal Ubuntu that like when applied to servers makes a lot of sense, right? Be opinionated, have really good defaults. Kind of, you know, pick one or two things to be good at and only do that. So I don't know. I would say that won't happen. That's going to be my guess.
Keep in mind, Jono's never won, so.
Yeah, that's, yeah.
Exactly.
So Jono's going to be wrong.
So,
cool.
Thank you for talking to us. Thank you for talking to us, George. If you want to see Ubuntu at scale, then come to scale next week and see Ubuntu.
I will show you. If you show up to my classes, they're all free. I'll pay for your Amazon credits. We'll like grab your laptop and you can actually get started. And then like if you think everything I've been explaining makes no sense to you, just show up. And it's easier to show you deploying stuff in clouds than it is to actually explain it. So
that's delightful. Excellent.
Please come to my talk, unless you're Brian Lundy. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you very much, George Castro.
Thanks, George.
Thanks, guys.
Later, dude.
We are a fucking shambles. You do realize
this. Just saying, that does wrap up the first show of 2016. If you were expecting the actor from Lost and listened to the whole show and are just supremely disappointed now, we all apologize.
Yeah, we'd like, yeah, please, you know, new listeners to Bad Voltage. It's not usually like.
All right, let's be honest. It's not usually that much different than this. I mean, this is about par for the course.
Actually, that's fair. So should we talk about the power and the glory?
I think we'd be remiss if we did not talk about the power and the glory.
I think the terrible thing here is that anyone listening to this show has just cancelled their ticket to Scale, if I'm honest.
Sorry, so, Scale organizers.
22nd of January, which is when next this show week. Comes out. It's yes, next yeah. week, basically. We're going to be doing the Bad Voltage live show. It's going to be amazing. Some yeah. updates on this for those people who don't know. We're going to have a load of free beer, which is great, which some of you already know about. But we've got some amazing prizes. I just want to highlight, like, Pogo Linux gave us this Verona 931H workstation that we're giving away. This is a... Intel quad-core i7. It's got 16 gig of RAM.
Nice.
It's got a GTX 960 NVIDIA graphics card. It's got a 480 gig SATA drive. It's got a 6 terabyte SATA drive. This thing is a freaking monster. It's worth $2,600, and you can win that if you come to
the show. It is a beast of a thing. I did a draw earlier to see who won, and it's some bloke called Stuart. I'm not sure what the surname is.
Someone there named Stuart. That's handy.
And we also have a Zaris and Strata laptop. We're giving away a Mycroft. We're giving away Amazon Fire Sticks. All kinds of stuff.
A Raspberry Pi 2.
Raspberry Pi 2 yeah. kit.
It seems like there's something else.
Console. Yeah. So,
oh my gosh.
Lots of cool stuff.
I will say the sponsors really, really stepped up on this one. We yes. really do appreciate it.
Yeah, so thank you, Linode, Microsoft, Pogo Linux. I think System 76 have given us some stuff as well. So thank you to all of us. And of course, our friends in Scale. So
just awesome. Friggin' yeah, awesome.
It's gonna be amazing. So get along. Badvoltage.com/live if you want to find out more
and
details.
And that's 8 there. P.M. on Friday. So that's 8 p.m. Yeah, Friday on the Friday during Scale. So that's, what is that, the 22nd? Yeah, January 22nd. Yeah. And it's free.
I should also
for
point
everyone.
Out that it's not badvoltage.com, it's badvoltage.org.
It is badvoltage.org/live.
Right.
If you're debating going to Scale and you haven't decided whether you're going to go yet, first of all, go, because it's really important. Secondly, we have, if you look at badvoltage.org/live, there is a sign-up code, a discount code you can use, which will get you 50% off your ticket.
Darn tootin'. Darn yeah. Darn freaking tootin'. It's awesome. So, and the big thing here is when you're there, so you don't have to go to Scale to get to Bad Voltage Live, but you should because you should it's absolutely. Awesome. Also, make sure you don't make evening plans for Thursday and Friday because that's when the big shows are happening. So my show is on Thursday night at 8 p.m. Bad Voltage Live, which is all four of us, is at 8 p.m. So don't make friggin' dinner plans over those shows because you'll be so disappointed that you didn't win that Pogo workstation. So no dinner plans. I'm going to reinforce this. Also, to the people who are running the UbuCon, the kind of co-located Ubuntu summit, don't make evening plans those days because your people will not go to your event. They will come to Bad Voltage Live and the other thing that I'm doing. So just a helpful hint to those guys in case they're listening, which they
it
are.
Ought to be pointed
I should
out
also
that-
say if you do plan to attend, do go to badvoltage.org/live. We're going to do a little family feud, or what do you guys call it in Europe? Family
fortunes.
Family fortune. And there's a little bit of a form that we're asking people to fill out, and the more people that fill that out are going, the better.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
So if you go to badvoltage.org/live, there is a link to that, and we would like you to fill it out. We've also tweeted about that about 600 million times. Thank you for that. As far as I can tell, the whole of Scale is just Bad Voltage top to bottom. I'm doing like 3 talks. Jono's doing about 3. Brian's got the right. Link Sucks on Thursday evening. Jeremy's just in the bar the whole time, I suspect.
I took the easy route this year.
It is. Well, Scale this year, just... All of Scale is kind of amazing. I mean, the people that are speaking at Scale, from Cory Doctorow to Mark Shuttleworth to friggin' us. I mean, it is a huge event. Like, I'm kind of blown away. I mean, most Linux events don't get that many big speakers and that many big shows. I mean, usually there's just one or two. You know what I mean? This is kind of intense.
And there's a hell of a lot of stuff going on. Even putting aside, you know, the big shows, there's like 6 or 7 tracks of things.
Yeah, and there's some good ones. There's some really good looking ones. So and Mad Dog's going to be there giving something. I mean, there's a ton of stuff. It's going to be a friggin' spectacular thing. So if you are anywhere near Pasadena, California, I'm talking anywhere near. We're talking like Southern Oregon up through like New Mexico. I think those are totally within range. Just get in the VW bus, pile up the Linux Nerds, and head to Pasadena, California. It's worth there, and there's a beach close by. You can just go sleep on the beach if you can't get a hotel, and then you can come to the show and win a big friggin' laptop and desktop.
What do you mean?
That's pretty awesome.
Oregon's within range. I'm on a different continent. Everyone.
I was going to say, you're being nicer than me. I would have drawn a circle to where we're all coming from instead of you're inside that circle. Come on.
People are in
which
Moscow
is pretty much the whole planet. Yeah.
The circle is quite large.
But yes, is there anything else? I don't think there's anything else, right? We're all getting there Wednesday, I think.
Yeah. I'll be there Wednesday, and it's going to be friggin' awesome. And man, I tell you what, guys, I am so looking forward to Saturday during Scale, because Saturday I have nothing I have to do. So I'll be able to bask in the glory of having done all these kick-ass shows with you guys and all the other stuff, and then I can just hang out with people and eat whatever food I can find. Now, I'm hoping that there is a Carl's Jr. close by. Have we checked this yet?
We're not going to Carl's Jr.
year,
again.
Last year, I ate Carl's Jr., 5 times during Scale, essentially in a row. I think there was one meal I ate not at Carl's Jr. kind of mixed in the middle there, but otherwise it was in a row.
I ate once not at Carl's Jr.
Yep.
It was amazing.
I ate every single meal at Scale last year at Carl's Jr.
Did you literally every single one?
To tell the tale, which shocked me.
It was terrible.
It was amazing.
So I actually did look at restaurants, and there are a plethora of quite good-looking restaurants within walking distance this year.
Thank goodness.
Carl's Jr.?
We're not going.
I feel like we have to do it at least once. So anyway, if you would like to see Stuart Langridge eat Carl's Jr., head over to community.badvoltage.org and talk about it. Talk to us about what you'd like to see Stuart Langridge eat during Scale, and we'll try and make that happen for you. See if we can take some pictures. It should be a lot of fun.
Well, we're going to have a huge bag full of nickels to pay for it all with, so that'll be excellent.
Sorry, all right, let's bring this to a close. Thank you, everyone, for hanging out with us. We'll be back in 2 weeks with the video
from
Live Voltage, hopefully. Yeah. Rock and roll, everybody. That's not how we're going to end it, right? I'm not just going to say rock and roll, everybody.
We are.
We're already rocking and rolling out of here, yeah.
Dude, that's the end of it. Yeah.
Damn it.
Hey, you guys, you couldn't hear me in the outro? My house got, like, overrun by crazy Cinnabon-eating ants. You can hear me screaming? No?